From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
As the political campaign of Hillary Clinton continues to target Russia, and most recently, it was announced that NatWest Bank in the UK was freezing the accounts of Russian news agency RT, we decided to speak with Peter Laveau from RT, who hosts the program Crosstalk on that global network. We spoke with him via Skype Tuesday. Peter, how you been?
Very well. Winter is starting, but just very well in general.
Yeah, I saw one of my Facebook friends is in Moscow. He said he hasn't seen the sun yet. He's been there for a couple days.
Well, we saw the sun a couple days ago. I had a guest on Crosstalk, and my eyes hurt. It tells you that we haven't had the sun for a long time, and it's only at the end of October.
Yeah, so well. I don't even know where to begin. I've got my jaw in my lap. They freeze RT's funds in the UK. There's this assault on a reporter from Sputnik by Newsweek and all kinds of threats and things, to basically telling the guy to shut up. We've got Chris Cuomo telling people on TV that it's a crime to read WikiLeaks. And the vice president of the United States is threatening a cyber attack on Russia. It just keeps piling on. And we've been talking about this for like a couple of years now, and it's just getting uglier and scarier.
Well, I think the nexus of it all is that it is the deep state, the Obama administration, doing everything in their power to have Hillary Clinton elected president, because we've had this narrative since the summer. Trump equals WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks equals Kremlin. Kremlin equals Putin. Putin equals Trump. And they're pulling the stops out on this. I think anyone that anyone that believes that the U.S. Cannot produce evidence, hard evidence, the Russians have been hacking. I mean, why are we spending billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars a year on the NSA? Of course they know who's doing this, but they're in on it too. This is a concerted campaign, along with a very pliant mainstream corporate media. They're all running for the finish line. And I think this is what it has to, all of this is focused on that. The unfortunate thing is, and the real world thing is that we go to the brink. You have to understand from where I live, when you hear this rhetoric coming out of primarily Washington, but other Western capitals like the UK, you have no choice but to take this kind of rhetoric seriously, because you have to defend yourself. I can't just say, well, you know, this is just part of the American campaign, American tradition and all that. No, if you're a Russian, you take it very seriously. And you know what, Don? They are taking it very, very seriously. This is a very, very dangerous moment in human history, because when you have all of these forces aligned, then it's not a conspiracy. I mean, it's very openly aligned right now to capture the state for this, in my opinion, an intensely corrupt politician, one of the most corrupt people that has ever run for the U.S. presidency.
Yeah. You talk about things aligning. You've had this, you know, in the deep state here, you know, within the deep state here, there are people who were the architects and the motivators of moving the U.S. military up to Russia's borders, for example, over the last 2.5-3 decades, after promising not even to go into East Germany. And now they're there, and there's weapons hot. You know, they light up these anti-missile, quote-unquote, batteries and such. They're putting THAADs into Korea, aimed at China. They're, you know, playing games with airplanes.
Let's not forget to the regime in Kyiv. I mean, they're... you know, they can't wait for a Clinton victory. They're going to get their lethal weapons.
Yep.
You know, we see the American-backed, EU-backed regime in Kyiv probing, looking for responses from the besieged people in the Donbass. We saw that sabotage, a failed sabotage attack on the Crimea. This is a real people. It drops out of the headlines in the U.S., but it's a very hot story still, and we need to continue to talk about it.
Yeah, and so you have all of that actual activity going on while this narrative that suits it perfectly is being crafted, you know, for the moment, apparently for the purposes of the election. But, you know, moving forward, you've joined that narrative to these facts on the ground with someone who is completely on board with the neocons and who, by the way, are also completely on board with her.
Well, and we have Ashton Carter. We have a sitting Secretary of Defense that it took upon himself to defy the President of the United States. You know, if Harry Truman had been alive or Ronald Reagan been alive, he would have been fired for dereliction of duty and gross insubordination. Yeah. I mean, he illegally bombed a sovereign country and no consequences. Hardly anyone talked about it in Western media. Oh, it was a mistake. Again, why are we spending hundreds of billions of dollars if you're going to be making these kinds of mistakes? It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. I want to follow up on what you were saying a second ago. I want your listeners to understand very clearly the Russian political elite that has genuine popularity and support from the populace. They do not trust the American political elite at all. Republican, Democrat, Green, Progressive, whatever you want to label you want to use. They don't trust anything. They've been watching for over a quarter of a century aggression moving towards their borders under different political parties. So, you know, this whole generated myth that Trump is the preferred candidate, you know, I think that they would look at Donald Trump and see him to be just as unreliable. You know, maybe Hillary Clinton is maybe better, actually, in fact, because it's the devil you know. So this entire narrative that is being generated and drip fed to the American public is complete fantasy. It shows a gross ignorance of the political realities on the ground in Russia.
You've got Dr. Stephen Cohen here saying essentially that the what they used to call the doomsday clock is closer to midnight than it has ever been, perhaps including perhaps the 54 years ago this week, what we call here the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I have seen in media reports that they are doing civil defense drilling and such in Russia now. It's how seriously they're taking this.
Let's be clear what that is all about. And it's been completely overblown in Western media. It is important, but it is something that is done every single year, Don.
Oh.
Every year. Every year it's done. Now, I think because of the international environment and the very aggressive and harsh rhetoric coming out of Washington, they're looking at it a lot more closely this year for a very good reason.
Is that canned tuna fish really okay this year?
But civil defense is something that is practiced here. And with good reason.
Yeah.
I mean, Russia has been attacked repeatedly over and over again in its history. Defense is what it knows best. Hey, again, tearing down these ridiculous myths that are being generated about Russia. Russia is mostly concerned about its sovereignty. Its sovereignty. The two pillars that Putin has rested his entire time in high office on is reform of the economy and society and sovereignization. Keeping the country sovereign so it can make its own decisions, be it in finance, be it in trade, be it in defense, be it in security. And that's why the Russian people like him. All right. Again, this will probably sound completely mysterious to some listeners, but that's the fact of the matter here. Russia is a status quo power. It wants to maintain its position in the international order, though we have people, the neocons now, on the main broadsheets of American papers openly calling for regime change. I mean, what the American exceptionalism is poisonous. It's poisonous for the international system.
You know, and as they discuss Russian aggression, for example, and keep in mind that you know, this war that may break out, we hope not, and I hope the statement, it probably won't, is accurate. But where it would break out is at Russia's borders, not Mexico and Canada. And so I'm trying to parse how exactly it's aggressive Russia that's going to be starting a war at its own borders.
Well, you know, Don, this whole thing about this clandestine cyber attack, I mean, Joe Biden makes a fool out of himself. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, you go announce a clandestine attack. I mean, get your head around that one, okay?
I know, right.
But what is very troublesome, if we look at the gross miscalculation of the Obama administration and its NATO allies, and including the European Union there, what they did in Ukraine, a catastrophe. What they have done in Syria, we could unfortunately talk about for hours on, and the gross miscalculation. We know from the Podesta email leaks from Wikipedia, from WikiLeaks, is that Hillary Clinton knew full well that Qatar and Saudi Arabia were supplying weapons to groups that we would call terrorists. You and I knew that, and you and I have told our audiences that. Now we have proof, absolute, undeniable proof. But what I do worry about with this cyber attack, let's call it nuclear tennis, all right? The U.S. lobs one over here. Look at that. I'm an American living in Moscow. I have to be afraid of my own government, okay? You know, I work at RT. Is RT going to be a target? To what degree will it be a target? They bomb hospitals and funerals and schools. What is Ashton Carter going to say in one day? Oops. You know, just like he said in Syria. These people have no credence. When I use the analogy nuclear tennis is because Russia can lob one back into your backyard, Don.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my backyard. I'm 30 miles north of Manhattan and about 8 miles from Indian Point nuclear power plant. IBM's corporate headquarters are here. There are a couple military bases around, including Fort Dix over in New Jersey, about 35, 40 miles from here. It's a target. It's the target. Actually, this in Washington, D.C. are the primary targets here, I assume, along with the missile bases in the central United States and whatever other military assets they have targeted. So, yeah, I'm radioactive vapor if this goes off that way.
Well, you know, it's probably not going to happen. You've mentioned it already. We have to – the default position is that these – people in Washington, they do have a sense of self-preservation. We both have to hope that, okay? What I worry about is a tit-for-tat with these cyber attacks, because Russia may act, and most probably would act asymmetrically, wouldn't do exactly what the U.S. did. But if the Americans want to point out and remind the Russians of their cyber capabilities, the Russians can do exactly the same thing, all right? And of course, the way the media is run, and I hope we can talk about Chris Cuomo in a second, because that just blew my mind, is that, you know, the Russians will not back down. If they're attacked, they're going to react appropriately. Now, because of the hubris and arrogance that we've seen from the current administration that is leaving office and from the rhetoric out of the Clinton campaign, you know, the Russians have to say to themselves, we have to be prepared. And that's what the Russian people expect them to do.
Yeah. I don't know how to, I mean, it still has a surreal characteristic to it, you know, like all enveloping surreality. That it's like I had a bad dream when I was 8 years old in 1962, and then I'm going to wake up and people are going to be talking sense instead of threatening world war.
Well, I mean, going down this path of RT's banking relationship with NatWest is they've backtracked in the last 24 hours. Now it's not a unilateral decision that cannot be talked about in dialogue. They've kind of stepped a little bit back because of the huge outrage in the UK about it. I mean, on Facebook, I just had to just sit back and watch the comments just flow in. I mean, it was difficult to keep track of them last night. It was a public relations disaster for the UK government, for a country that, you know, essentially invented what's free speech with the Magna Carta and all that, you know, and they're doing this right now. But they're not going to let up. I don't see that at all. They don't want RT in the UK. RT has a lot of popularity there and has a lot of reach there. In the U.S., it's a little bit different. It's more of an internet experience. But I personally think, and I'm doing this, this is just from my own personal thoughts on it, is that the attack on RT in the U.K. is just the precedent for the attack on RT in the U.S. Yeah. And that might include Sputnik.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was also puzzling over how they would do that, play that with the banks. I mean, there are Chinese banks in the UK, for example.
Well, you're a smart guy, Don, because that is something that was pointed out to me today, that could be done. Yeah, we'll see where it goes. It's the halo effect in a marketing term here. You know, what are the reasons for ending the banking relationship there with RT and NatWest? I mean, were any laws broken? Can we please have some transparency here? If there were laws broken, please present your case. There should be recourse. I mean, under any broadcaster in a foreign country, there are certain rules and regulations, and there should be recourse. We haven't heard any of that right now. I would suppose that someone else could come and take that bank's place. But this was a bank that was controlled by the Royal Scottish Bank, which is 73% owned by the British government. It's pretty rich to try to convince me that this didn't have any governmental hand behind
right,
it. Okay,
right.
So I mean, any other bank that is going to be take up. Come to the fore is going to have to keep in mind that this is a political issue for the British political establishment. So we'll see where it goes. But a precedent has been set. It was already set with Press TV. They were denied access out after a time in the UK, and now they're doing it to RT. You know, shutting down is this the answer to the lack of dialogue? Censorship? Like you said, this is kind of like a bad dream. You can think of these things, you can think out loud, daydream, but it's happening right in front of us.
Yeah, I was thinking about something else too. We spoke when it was happening about the broadcast board of governors here and how they were playing these games to fund up some sort of way to contest Russian propaganda out in the marketplace. And they changed law here so that what used to be Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, all of that, and barred from propagandizing the American people, at least legally, that as it partnered with the banished oligarch from Russia, was allowed to propagandize, and I assume has been heavily propagandizing the American public ever since. And yet, with all the money, resources, and everything else they have, the best thing that they can think of to counter RT is to try to shut it down.
Well, that's their problem. I mean, their real problem is not contested narratives like what RT provides. It's because their lack of transparency. Why do we have WikiLeaks? It's not because Julian Assange is some kind of genius. I don't even particularly like the guy, really. I think it's too much about him. But WikiLeaks provides a public service because Western journalism has collapsed. Right. It's absolutely collapsed. It is in collusion with the state. And we see this with this election cycle. And so the only way they can counter an alternative narrative is to ban it, because they can't tell the truth. They can't tell the truth about what's going on in government. What we've seen from these Podesta emails is an amazing insight on how corrupt politics are in the United States today, how utterly corrupt and cynical. It's truly extraordinary, particularly, when they accuse their opponent, Donald Trump, of poisoning the well of public discourse, and you read what they actually really think. It really is a very sad comment about what we're all told is a democratic process, which is not. It is a rigged system. And this time around, you have the media, corporate media, fully on board. They're given talking points. They're asked for talking points. It is incredibly corrupt, very, very dangerous. And there's no, what's important is there's no check on it. There is no powerful check on it. And this is what makes it very, very dangerous. Because you know what, Don? These people, end up believing their own propaganda. And when you believe your own propaganda, this is what happened to the Soviet Union, the results can be dire.
I've been having a conversation ongoing with Professor Tony Montero that he focuses primarily on a crisis of legitimacy that taking place in the West in general, but particularly in the United States, and the manifestations of that in the electoral cycle with the rise of people behind Sanders and the rise of people behind Trump, who were both seen as not only outsiders, but also challenging the legitimacy of the existing structures. And the way they've handled it, on the one hand, with the theft of the election, essentially, almost out in the open, from Sanders, and then, you know, forcing him to toady for Clinton in direct contradiction to everything that he said, in essence, except that he would support the nominee, but not that he would be a toady. And then the wall-to-wall, obvious, you know, attack from you know, day and night on Trump since he became a credible candidate. This is happening in front of people who already didn't believe in the structures here, and many people see it now, and given how their situation financially, economically, in every way really has become so dire, they're forced to try to figure out what's going on, and they're seeing this and they can't turn their eyes away from it. It's a pretty frightening moment here, too.
What's interesting is that they've become victims of their own maniacal agenda. You delegitimize Bernie Sanders, and they achieved it. Interestingly enough, legitimized Donald Trump until the summer, till the convention, and then the process of delegitimizing him went into effect. The interesting thing is, during the Republican primary, they gave so much attention to Trump because he was so unbelievable, not credible, that would delegitimize any kind of Republican nominee. It ended up, and I truly believe that Donald Trump did get the votes that he got. And now, because of this delegitimizing the process, they have delegitimized themselves.
Right.
Because now no one believes anything. I call this the era of disbelief. And this is very, very dangerous because people will, you know, go into, you go onto Facebook, I go onto Facebook. Very good friends.
Yeah.
I have great exchanges of ideas, particularly of articles that I might have missed. But then, you know, there's the, I'd say the kind of, our nice, lovable friend on the lunatic fringe. And, you know, it goes into, we're all talking about Syria, you know, the supporting of terrorism. And then, you know, one of our lunatic friends, it's all the Jews' fault. It's all Israel's fault.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, this is what, and I look at these people, and I don't think they're maniacal and all that, but they've come to some kind of epiphany of who do I believe? And when you don't know what to believe, when nothing seems legitimate, then a lot of people go down the path of very worrisome ideas and views of the world. And I have, it really pains me because I know a lot of people that get so furious with CNN, but then they'll go too far away. They'll wander way off the reservation. And these people still have, you know, agency. They go out and they propagate these ideas. And it's damaging to you and me, and I'm sure the vast, vast majority of your audience.
And it's bad for them, too, obviously.
Yeah.
To me, last night I participated in a debate. A friend of mine is the head of, or he's involved in a local NAACP chapter in Peekskill, New York. And they were at my house after the wake, my wife's wake on Friday, 5-6 of us, and he was talking to one or two of my friends about this event they were going to have last night, and said, you know, I don't know if we're going to pull it off because we can't find anybody that'll speak for Trump. So I said, you know, I need to get out of the house. I mean, you know, there's nobody here but me now and this stupid dog. So I said, you know what, I'll do that. All the jaws drop in the room. They turn and look at me like, you know, this is our like communist lefty friend, and he's going to go, you know, stand for Trump. But I said no, because there's a lot that has to be parsed out, and this will be an opportunity to do it. So I go there, and a group of intelligent people concerned enough to be at an event like this instead of home watching TV or whatever, and heard regurgitated a lot of the stuff that is on TV screens. And it occurred to me, it's like a social hallucination. If you see somebody who has had a psychotic break or, you know, is in some kind of alcoholic withdrawal or something, where they're walking along and they're talking to people and things that aren't there. And it's almost the same mindset in terms of your social interaction, because you have this picture and this narrative and this soundtrack that is completely false. It has it's decoupled from the material world, in essence, except for its attempt to manipulate you through it. And people have no idea what to do because they don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah. You know, the thing is what's so dangerous about it is that this narrative that we're being drip-fed, it does have some coherence. And I think that's what makes it so disturbing for some people, because they see their reality around them. They can't help but reflect upon the narrative that they're spoon-fed, because there's almost no alternative presented to them. And this creates this dissidence. It creates a lot of tension, because if the world is different from what I'm told, but the only thing I'm told is the way the world is, at least to someone else. And I think this drives a lot of anxiety. You know, this campaign has really all been about insurrection and how to control it, and how to manipulate it. I truly, truly regret the whole Bernie Sanders phenomenon. The kowtowing was really painful for me, because I don't care at the end about Bernie Sanders, and I don't mean that disrespectfully.
No, me neither.
But the agenda.
Yeah, it's not about him.
The agenda
is
there, and, right. And that it needs to move forward. And I come from the cultural right, okay? All right?
Right?
So this is how important I think his message was for a real civil, and I use it in the way that society should be, a civil society.
Right.
And that agenda is about a civil society, and it's about participation. And so, of course, you know, again, the establishment and the mainstream media had to delegitimize that message, and that's when they gave so much attention to Trump. I mean, it's an amazing switch in bait. Switch and bait. And it's very much like what Stalin did in the late 20s, is that, you know, he isolated individuals that he was against, and he got everyone else to take them on. And then finally, there was no one else to save themselves.
Right.
And this is, you know, it's very much like how Stalin operated. This is what the establishment, the deep state, is doing.
You know, you mentioned civil society, and it occurred to me before that, too. It slipped my mind, but it relates to what happened in the UK over the last couple of days with, you know, RT is there doing business. It's got a bank account. It's paying staff. And it's doing all the things that, you know, a normal business operation does. And you can't rely even on the legal structures to protect your normal right to do business with laws and courts and all of that, because there's some deep state, you know, apparatchik, whatever, somebody can reach in and sweep all of that aside. Now, that was what they would point at Russia and even China say, you can't invest there because they can seize your property to Mars and, you know, unpredictable environment, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm looking at that phenomenon manifesting itself here repeatedly with the sanctions, with the, you know, with these kinds of seizures, with even things where they were seizing people's properties here. You've seen stories about in Texas, you know, steal your Porsche, and the next day the sheriff's driving it around, things like that. You have multipolar economy growing around the world, and suddenly the United States is becoming less reliable as an investment destination.
You know, when speaking about RT in the UK, RT in the UK is watched like a hawk by a number of regulatory agencies, very much so. In my memoirs, I will go into greater depth. But RT is acutely aware of British law, acutely.
Right.
We have lawyers that are looking at everything to make sure everything is in line. Again, you know, NatWest cuts their relationship with RT without any reason. Was there a law broken? Can we have recourse? You're right. The rule of law, which is, you know, said not to apply in countries like Russia or China or any of the BRICS countries, is certainly running pretty thin in the European Union and the UK. Let's not forget Brexit and the US. So,
yeah, on that note, Peter, thank you very much for your time. A pleasure to speak with you, as always.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.